Well, I guess it's about 7 o'clock. I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight for the Committee of the Whole meeting of the Eastern Lancaster County School Board for the month of October. I ask just a friendly reminder for everybody to please wear their masks at their seat, except when you're speaking into the microphone. If you have the opportunity to come up to speak at the microphone or as a board member seated at your seat, to please wear your mask out of respect to the other people in the meeting room. At this time, will you please rise and join me for a moment of silence, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, at this time, as in with every meeting, we have opportunities for citizens of the district to come before our board here and make comments. And this evening, it looks like we only have one person, Joan Benjamin. If you please come forward, state your name and address, and you can deliver the prayer.
Do this. Great.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Okay, well, this is different. I'm sure we're all going to get used to a very different year this time. I'd like to preface it by just thanking you all for being here. Thanking you for what you do on behalf of the kids and the parents. It's easy to say you had a Lollapalooza of a year last year, and you handled it admirably, and we thank you. So anyway, I have the honor to start the meeting off with a prayer. Almighty God and Father, it seems ever more true that we need you more than ever. Just about every time we come together and everything that occurs. So Father, Almighty God, Adonai, you who know the end from the beginning, you to whom nothing is too great or too small, we do not know what this board and the people this town face, this school faces in this coming year, but you do. And we are overwhelmingly grateful and relieved about that fact. So Father, in whatever comes up, whatever the issue is, we ask for your wisdom, your clarity in thoughts, your kindness, your justice and mercy in words. And when things seem murky, may we remember that you are the lamp to our feet. You are the light to our path. In your holy and precious name, Lord, amen. Thank you, folks.
Amen. Thank you. All right, at this time we have the personnel report, Nadine, or Bob, whichever wants to.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just one introduction for me, and I believe one for Dr. Larkin as well. I am very pleased to introduce you to Dr. Matthew Fox. He is seated in the front row, second row. Matt is coming to us from the Conestoga Valley School District. It's a rare occasion that we are able to hire administrators with equal experience. He's coming over to us from Conestoga Valley as a high school assistant principal. With experiences in all of the areas that Mr. Good and a combination of Mr. Good and Mr. Cox are vacating. So we're pleased. At this time, we believe Dr. Fox will actually occupy an office at the middle school, but he will have 7 to 12 responsibilities in a couple different areas as we look to reorganize our administrative team. So welcome aboard, Dr. Fox. In a moment here, we'll be approving you. Dr. Fox will get to us as soon as he's released from his responsibilities over at Conestoga Valley. And as I told him and I told the superintendent there, at their timeline, not ours. It's important for him Mr. Fox, Dr. Fox, to leave there with his integrity and finish up all his responsibilities before he can fully engage over here with us. And we understand that and we promote that. So welcome aboard for now, Matt, but we'll be seeing you again hopefully sooner rather than later. Thank you.
And today we also have a new music teacher, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Eric to introduce her to you.
Good evening. I'm going to introduce Amber Adams. She comes to us from Harrisburg City School District, a graduate of Millersville. Very student-centered focus in her instruction. We're very happy to have her as a member of the team at New Holland Elementary. Excited for what she can bring.
Well, I had forewarned Dr. Fox here that sometimes I ask inquisitive questions. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to college? And like with everybody here, do you have any family you'll be sharing with us? You know what I mean? Pets or anything like that?
We can talk to the microphone, or are you standing still?
I'll talk to the microphone.
All right. I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so Pittsburgh everything fan. North of it, I went to Mars High School, so I was a fighting planet. And then I went to Millersville, and then I've been at CV for 5 years. And then I don't have any student or any kids at home, but I do have a dog, a little white boxer. So his name's Mazeroski. So if you're an old-time baseball fan, you know Bill Mazeroski. Yes. That's where his name came from. Another Pittsburgh connection. But I'm excited to be here, and I'm appreciative of the opportunity.
Thank you. And do you have anything you'd like to share about us, where you grew up, and any little tidbits? And
Sure. I grew up in Cecil County, Maryland, okay, in Conowingo. And I also graduated from Millersville University. I'm coming from the Harrisburg School District. I've been there for about 3 years now, teaching elementary music there. And I also do not have any children yet, but I do have a cat. He's orange, and his name is Coda. And hopefully I'll have more cats.
There you go.
No. Yeah, that's about it. And thank you.
Well, that's up to negotiation, as I like to say. I got an easy one. I've been married 35 years, and my wife's allergic to cats. So it's not an option in our house. Thank you for both for sharing those things with us. All right, moving right along. We have to vote on the personnel report. Do I have a motion to approve the personnel report?
So moved.
Properly moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Welcome aboard, both of you. Thank you. Thanks for joining the team. Mr. Conroy, I hate to interrupt. You've got to put your mask. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
All right. Property and services. Mr. Ramsey.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I have two action items for next Monday night. The first one is the approval of the agreement with New Holland Borough for our school resource officer. You'll see in the notes that our expiring agreement, we were paying $95,064 in 2019-20, and within that agreement, we had an annual escalator of 3% per year. In working with the New Holland Borough, myself and Dr. Hollister, and working with Mr. Fulcher, we were able to have that agreement reduce the total amount to $91,808. For 2021, and reduce the escalator from 3% to 2%. So we currently have Joel Stolzfus as the SRO, and he's been doing a tremendous job, and we are very, very happy with his services. I will note when we get to the end of the three-year agreement, there is a one-year extension if we both agree to it. If we took the fourth year of the agreement, if we executed that, we would be under what we were going to pay in 2021 under the old agreement with a 3% increase. So we're very pleased with that. The second action item that we will have for next Monday is the we actually are opening bids for the roof replacement over the new gym. That will be this Thursday at 10 a.m. So far, we have six potential bidders. Four of them are local, which is very nice to see. And we've worked with two of them, and we're very pleased to see that they're on the bid list. So we'll open those bids, and then we'll award it on Monday. Once we open the bids, as you know, this is part of our insurance reimbursement, so we'll send over the information, and they'll let us know what our potential reimbursement will be, and hopefully we'll have that by Monday, but if we don't, we'll let you know when we have it. Those are the two action items. The only information item that I have is the 21-22 Act 1 Index. As you know, this is the index. This is the maximum amount that we're able to increase taxes without going for exceptions. That index increased from 2.6% for this current year. It went up to 3% for next year. So more than likely, as I'm completing the AFR and looking at and running the numbers, we will not be eligible for any exceptions this upcoming year. So we'll more than likely pass the resolution to opt out of the early budget adoption and just stay within the index. So more to come on that.
Just a couple comments on Mr. Ramsey's report. Going back to the SRO, just be aware that there was some back and forth as we cleaned up language. We've been in this with this partnership with New Holland Police Department for, oh my gosh, 7 or 8 years now. Ever since Ed Sprecher passed away, we've been working with them with a school resource officer. Prior to Mr. Good was our safety coordinator, which is one of the roles that Dr. Fox will be stepping into. Mr. Good and I went through the contract with a pretty fine tooth comb to make sure that we all understood languages, and we worked out a few little areas of disagreement or misinterpretation. So not only did we do a little better financially, we also cleaned up some language to make it more clean on responsibility. So I'm fully supportive of the contract with the New Holland Police Department for the SRO. And as Mr. Ramsey said, Officer Stoltzfus is really doing a great job. We really appreciate his services. The other comment, and it's really a question for Keith, just to give us ideas as we look forward to the budget season, if the district would go with a 3% increase, Keith, how much money, how many dollars does that generate? And then I want to put those dollars quickly into some of our major expenses.
That would generate about just around $1 million.
Okay. So our teachers' contract increase is roughly
3.15%.
Yeah, how much in dollars?
About
$600,000 for the teachers' increase, and our cyber charter schools are over now $800,000.
They're about, well, they were at 800. We did have four come back to us, so we're about $750,000.
So with those two items, you've already spent your increase for next year. I'm just giving you a perspective on dollars and where we're at. Now, that doesn't account for revenues that we have, other revenues that may go up or not, hopefully go up. But just to give you an idea, perspective of what that looks like. Our cyber charter school costs are really hurting us. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in my report here in a few minutes. All right, thank you.
All right, are there any other questions for Keith? Hearing none, we'll move on to program.
Yes, good evening. I have one action item, and we have an additional affidavit of guardianship, which will need your approval next week.
Well, thank you, Nadine.
Okay.
All right, management.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a number of items this evening. The first is the superintendent focus areas. Again, I sort of previewed these last meeting. I've put them together with some objective measures. Gave those to the board last week. Hopefully we can get those approved so I can actually begin some of these things. Again, in a normal year, there would be multiple pieces of input for these focus areas. What I have done is sort of gleaned from the administrators, from the board, the different areas or sectors of the school district that I think needs my increased attention. And so I fleshed out those focus areas based on the common threads that I've teased out of conversations the last couple months and into last spring. They're aggressive. I will say I do not expect to meet every measure of these goals because they are numerous and pretty and somewhat complicated. For example, focus area B is just going to be the beginning of a conversation. That's going to take multiple years to discuss equity and in our system, et cetera. So some of these are ongoing, but it gives you an idea of where I intend to put my additional energies and time this year. Any questions on the focus areas? Again, we previewed these last month. Okay. Next item I have for management is policy 237. 237, you can see some of the changes. I want to acknowledge Mr. Naranjo. He noted that we needed to check in with the building principals on part of that policy, and he was correct. I, in fact, did that. And so the changes you see in policy 237 from last month are because of the input directly from the administrators so that the policy more accurately reflects our actual practice. We do allow our students to at times use their cell phones and in fact are encouraged to do that at times in the classroom. The teacher may say, take out your cell phone if you have one and do something. So the administrators put those caveats in the policy, but we are ready to make that policy formal as of next week. We do not need action on this evening. It can wait another week. Keep in mind, policy 237 was an existing policy that we are updating. Any questions? The next policy is policy 815.1. Again, this has been on our docket for a little while. This is a brand new policy, and for obvious reasons, regarding live stream and many of the things that we're doing both in the classroom and for our athletics, policy that came from our attorney who specializes in online and technology instruction. So again, they gave us the language. There's really no language provided here by the school district. We are taking this policy directly from the specialized legal services that we have for the school district. Any questions? The next item I have is a request. Hang on. Yeah, request for some additional time for our teachers. I believe it was Mr. Buck last month who said, "What can we do for the teachers?" And I've been struggling with that myself. I mean, short of lots of thank yous and lots of praise, that only gets you so much. So what I have found and what I've talked to different people, simply a breather is what they need. The greatest gift is time, quite frankly. So I'm asking for the board to adjust the calendar again to provide 3 half days in the next couple of months that we would give to teachers at their discretion. They may use that time however they wish. They could just spend time in their classroom. They could spend time with other teachers if they wish to share ideas. It really would be teacher directed. The administrators would not sort of tell them what to do. It would be time for them to take a breath and really do whatever they feel they need to do in order to get a little more sanity built back into the world. So you can see the dates. I've tried to spread them out. I'm also paying close attention to the amount of hours that we have. We do have to watch to make sure that we continue to get our total number of hours in the school year. We also need to get a certain number of days, and that's why I'm asking for half days. If we start having snow days, we're going to need to really evaluate how we do that. We're thinking that we can actually get some instruction credit for those snow days if we do that correctly. So at this point, I would ask for these 3 half days at this time and then just see where we are. Are there any questions or concerns about that? The thought would be we'd prove that as quickly as possible so that we can get that information out to parents so they can make their adjustments as well.
Dr. Hollister, just one question. What does a typical half day look like? Do students get lunch?
Good question. Yeah, so the way we do that now is typically secondary doesn't get lunch, elementary does. Mm. I'm right about that, correct? Yeah, okay. Yeah, we try to make sure the elementary guys get their lunch, but we typically do not feed the secondary. If the board really wanted us to, we could jockey our our schedule to make sure secondary got lunches as well, but we have not traditionally done that in the past.
That would be my only concern. I just know, you know, over the past couple of years, we've talked about the increase in the number of families that depend on our free and reduced lunch program.
Yep.
And I just would be concerned that the more days we add where students don't get lunch, it's just another time where some of these kids may or may not get a meal. So.
No, that's a fair observation, and I'm certain we can make a schedule work. I heard Dr. Fox is a master scheduler, so we can.
Hit the
ground. Matt, if you could have that for me tomorrow morning, I would really appreciate that. And then you can send your thank you note to Mr. Naranjo. Yeah. No, that's a good idea, Brian. We'll make sure we work that out so that we can get the secondary something.
Could we do some type of maybe grab and go?
That's what I'm thinking,
because
too.
Because I don't want them to lose more instruction, being that we're already going down the...
We probably would do a grab and go.
Like a bagged lunch option or something they could
something
take with
like
them?
Something like that, yeah. Or an enhanced... It might be so early that it might even be breakfast. It might be a breakfast item.
I just don't want to add more stress to the teachers, you know, now throwing that into their schedule on top of a half day.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good information.
Jackie, are you suggesting that adding half days for professional development add more stress to our teachers?
Oh.
I believe in some situations, in some schools, depending on how schedules are made during an abbreviated day, it can, in fact, become more work for teachers. I don't know if that is this current situation here. I don't know how our teachers feel about that. I do, though, know that teachers are told, like, this is what a half day looks like for the rest of the year, if we have them, and then to now throw lunch into that will change what they are accustomed to planning for in a half day situation. So that would add more work, is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, and so we may work this out a couple of ways. What we may end up doing is having full classes, but only have half the classes one day, half the classes the other day at the secondary. It won't affect the elementary nearly as much, especially if there's advance notice. I think we can be pretty creative and find ways, even if we have to adjust the times a little bit for these early dismissals. I'd rather not, because I think people have sort of gotten into the routine. But this is easy enough management that we can figure this out. And again, the teachers really would be sort of, it would be a self-working moment. That's really what they're really clamoring for, as I talk to people, and understandably so. Okay, that'll be for action next week then. Item E is an annual update. Item E is the annual approval of the Agricultural Department Advisory Board. You'll notice that there are a few names short this year. We've started a slow transition to begin working that board a little bit more typical of a normal board. For a long, long time, the Ag Board was sort of the same people all the time with very little turnover. Last year, we began the discussions of term limits for our Ag Board members, as well as term limits for the chair, so that we continue to keep that fresh. Some of the folks that were on the Ag Board were no longer even working in the ag world. And so, as is in everything, the world changes pretty quickly. And so we need to have fresh faces. Some of what we're trying to do is include some Ag Board members from outside the immediate school district as well. Folks like the gentleman who has his big, huge business, international business, is vertical garden growing. He's got numerous huge facilities in the Middle East, for example. Perhaps a representative of Star Rock Farms. Star Rock Farms is an enormous farming operation on the other side of the county. So I think we do need to diversify that board a little bit, too. The board has agreed to that. They've said, yeah, we need to do this. That then would meet the recommendations provided by PDE for that as well. So you'll see the beginning of some names turning over there on that ag board. But for this year, this is the board that we're going with. That's for approval next week as well. Any questions on the Ag Board?
Is it typical that there would be an even number of people on the board?
Not typical.
Just yeah. That's the way it worked. The natural attrition led to
yes,
an correct. Even number.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. They. I mean, I see where you're going with that, Mr. Ronjo, and that's a good observation. They typically don't have a lot of controversial votes among that board. They really are truly an input board, a lot less. In fact, I don't recall the last time they took a vote on anything, Tom. I really can't remember. Occasionally they do, but it's not.
I think the only one was to follow the new guidelines. You know, that was the only one I can recall. Yeah,
it really is more of a conversation with those folks, more of input, and they sort of nod, which is part of the problem, too. I mean, they're really not creating any real energy there either. No offense to Mr. Wenzel, but he understands what I'm talking about.
It's a very informal type of meeting, and it's
so it's one of the areas that we want to try and I spoke to Katie last week and last year and Mr. Shirk, and we all agreed that it was time to formalize that board, put some term limits in there, rotate the chair, and mix up the bodies. And I think then we may get to that point where we're actually doing some voting on some real serious issues.
People may wonder, you know, I have no connection to agriculture anymore, but as board president, they thought it'd be a good idea to have the board president remain on the, and whoever follows me as board president to serve in that board if they so wish.
Correct.
Could you just give me a run through? This is kind of new to me. How do these people get on the board? Are they voted on? Are they elected? I'm just not understanding where they came from.
Yeah, so honestly, Jackie, it's Ms. Geyer, it's been pretty informal. It's not a highly desired position. Pretty much, if you volunteer, you get approved, and that's sort of how it's been. We're actually trying to get away from that. We really would like to give the board some forward thinking. Actually, these are just really nice community people who fill a need that we have because we're required to have a board. For this particular part of our operation, so in all good spirit towards these folks, they have just said, "Yeah, I'll do it because you need some people." What I'd really like to do is make this board more productive through the upgrades and some of the changes. And they themselves agree; the board has agreed to this course of action as well. But we're required by statute to have a board for some of the credits that we get and give our students in the ag area. That's why.
What is the typical number on the board? You said this is less than
We've had anywhere from 12 to 14.
Okay.
And again, it often depends on trying to get the broadest representation that we can. And so we may bring some folks on who would inflate that number. In the past, we've had multiple board members on, which was more really what we shouldn't have had. Again, we had multiple board members from this board on that board, and that really is almost a conflict in some ways. So it's migrated over the years.
So if you would know someone that would be good at it, who would you even recommend? I guess that's what I'm
right.
Like, do you
okay.
recommend
so,
them to the
so,
board?
Yeah.
Like,
hey, so when we so what the board is currently doing is it's sort of developing a matrix to try and represent the various different fields of agriculture. And there are a lot. You'll never get them all represented with 12 or 14 people. But the idea is to get someone from ag production, someone from a veterinarian, all the different sectors of ag, so that you have the greatest representation. So they're creating that matrix. And then what they're going to do is they're going to go out and try and target specific people to fill as many check marks on the box as they can. But again, with COVID right now, everything's in slow speed. The board typically meets about 3 times a year. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. The next item I have is an introduction to a new policy. It's a revised policy. It's attached. Please note, and I appreciate the color coordination by Mr. Johnson, there are a lot of changes to this policy. This is the last of the O's. If you recall, we did all of the zero policies last year with the exception of this one. Again, we are basically taking the language that PSBA recommends with the exception of there are a few areas where we had to choose boxes. I did those. I made those choices based on our current practice. Certainly the board could change that, but I didn't see anywhere in there where we would have a strong desire to change what we're currently doing. Certainly you can if you wish. And that's all clearly marked with the code that Mr. Johnson put together for us. Again, a lot of reorganized text. We looked at text policies from several other school districts in the county to see if we are measuring up the same way, and we pretty much are. Again, PSBA, their policy making division up there is pretty solid, and we typically follow their counsel when it comes to this, because they use a bank of attorneys, including our law firm, as one of the folks who help them write policies. So we're typically in line. Occasionally with a policy, we may seek the solicitor's counsel, but again, with this one, it seems pretty clean to me, and I thought the PSBA did a good job. So that'll be on your docket, not for next week, but the following month. And again, it's the last of the zeros that we must have in place before we then start looking at the 100 series. Next item I have is, we talked a little bit about the charter schools earlier. The cyber charter schools, as you saw, is one of my goal areas. What I hope to do, assuming approval of those next week, is to really begin pulling together some statistics, both here and what it means to us and what it means to the taxpayers here, but also at that greater policy level in terms of the quality of education that the citizenry is paying for in the Commonwealth. I would argue that cyber charter schools are not performing nearly as well as public schools, and it's a great fleecing of this Commonwealth, the amount of money that's going out versus what we're getting for the quality of that learning. And so I intend to make this sort of my Don Quixote of this year with the legislators, and really try to make them understand. I know Mr. Wenzel was at a meeting not too long ago where Mr. Representative Zimmerman and Senator Ahmet were speaking, and Representative Zimmerman really didn't seem to have any understanding of what this was, at least he claimed to. So I think we need to do some informing and some teaching. But just in 1 month, our cyber charter schools went up from September to October $100,000. And we're in the hole. We had budgeted 1.5, 1.6 budget. What was our 1.1, and we're now nearly 2 million, so are getting close to 2 million. So it's a huge amount of money for what we get. Special education student here in this district, if they go from us to a cyber charter school, we have to pay that cyber charter school nearly $29,000. There's just no way they're getting $29,000 worth of service in a cyber charter school for special education. I just don't buy it. So, again, keep in mind that we're talking about cyber charter schools. I happen to know that there are some bricks and mortar schools that are superior to what we're doing here. I will freely admit that. I visited two of them last year in Allentown. There are two amazing bricks and mortar charter schools, but that's very different than cyber. And they're really, those bricks and mortar charter schools are serving a real purpose in the Allentown area, really, truly. Unbelievable. But this is an issue for us, and it's a lot of money for us. So we're going to take a look at that.
Can I ask what the numbers are for just a regular charter school that we are shelling out each year? I keep hearing what the numbers are.
I'm sorry.
Cyber.
I have that. Yeah, it's right here. This year, so a regular student, if someone leaves and goes and signs up for a cyber charter school, we have to write a check to that cyber charter school for $13,568. $13,568. We're able to operate our Elanco online here for about $3,000 a student, and it's a much better experience because they can come and go. They can come in for specials. They can come in just to do a science experiment. I mean, we're very flexible with our Elanco online here. They can come in for PE, since PE is obviously harder to do online. So we operate our charter school, our cyber charter school, our Elanco online program, almost like a buffet style or a la carte. You pretty much will if you want to do something, we'll make it work. We try to bring these families back. The other thing I should tell you, I can't remember if someone asked this question or if you all did, you know, we're doing everything we can to get those families to come back. We call the families. We say, hey, can we do something with you? Can you work with us? In the past, I know Dr. Winters would have dinners every fall. We would invite these families in for dinner. Hey, just talk to us. You know, what is it that you're not happy about with us? And it really is sort of a customer service kind of conversation that we have with them. So we're trying to get our numbers back this year with COVID. Of course, everything's really out of skew. We certainly didn't expect this number of learners jumping out. And we don't really know the reason. Some are probably going because they don't want to wear masks. Some are going because they do have to wear masks. It's just we don't know why they left. Some of it's probably because they didn't feel safe here because we have so many students here. So I really don't know that. I just know that we're in the hole now, you know, hundreds and hundreds, almost $1 million.
I think my question was, maybe I didn't phrase it right. What are we paying each year for kids in charter schools, not cyber charter?
Same amount of money, same number, Ms. Skyer. Same amount of money, yeah.
You mean we have that many students in just a regular charter school?
Yeah,
so it's that plus the $2 million in cyber charter?
No. So we have, that's a good question. I don't know if these are not all cyber. Okay, they are all cyber. So we would have to get that for you as well. We don't have very many bricks and mortar because we don't have a bricks and mortar charter school in the area. Correct. So we don't have any. We don't have any bricks and mortar charter school attendees.
We don't have a single student at a brick and mortar charter school.
No, we do not, because there isn't really one close by.
If I can ask, who sets those prices?
The state tells us what we got to pay. It's based on our spending. So here's the other thing. Every school district's different in the county.
Okay.
Depends on your cost per student after you back out transportation and a couple other things.
So when you say the state, you mean the legislature sets that? And, like, if so, how would Ryan Almond not know that we have to pay?
He knows. Dave Zimmerman was the one who was a little
Dave
vague.
But beyond that, the biggest travesty is the auditor general of the state, which, you know, audits, you know, the school district and everything, has no power over these cyber charter schools.
Mm-mm. No.
They bankrolled 80, 90 million, one of them up in New York State.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are a number of these and charter school, and I mentioned this before, who've been imprisoned because they're just taking money hand over fist. In fact, I sit on the Standards and Practices Commission for the state, and Trebetta, who is one of the biggest CEOs of a charter school, we just took his certificate. He was technically a teacher. We just took his certification from him last year. It finally got to the Standards and Practices Board for his theft of money. So the one thing you'll read in the headlines, there continues to be an attempt with SDL and in Conestoga Valley to open up a charter school, a bricks and mortar charter school. They've made several attempts. An out of state company has come in, and the latest was they were going to make it an athlete focused bricks and mortar charter school. They had trouble. This has been going back and forth. They actually had trouble. The school district of Lancaster hired attorneys, and they fought them and closed them down. So that was when they initially were going to be a special education charter school. They jumped out to Conestoga Valley. They found a facility in the Conestoga Valley School District so that they could draw out city students into that charter school. So it's a real game that they play. This group recently went back to the city, and they were rejected again for a bricks and mortar charter. But I also will say one of the number, I think, at least it was at one time, the number one school in the Commonwealth was a bricks and mortar charter school in the Souderton School District out in Souderton.
Is our percentage of kids that go to cyber charter school comparable across the county, or are we high percentage-wise or low?
I don't know that right now. I would have said in the past we were low because we had our own. Now it's just such a hard time of the year to get
accurate information.
Is it going to be valid next year? Okay. And I'm hoping by the end of this year, hopefully things will settle down. Hopefully a number of these guys will come back. I mean, that's really what I'm hoping before budget season. Okay. I'll have more for you. What I'll do is I'll pull together what I intend to do for part of my goals is to actually put together a small talking, like a 10-minute presentation that I could take out to the General Assembly members, to community members, to Kiwanis, to whatever club will hear me, just to make sure, because people just don't know. As much as we've talked about this, people just don't know. Yes, Mr. Irvin.
And I will say, when all the reading that I do on the cyber schools, the number one reason that students leave their school district and go to a cyber school is they say they're bullied. So that's one thing we have to focus on, and we can't go to the legislature and ask them for their help if we can't tell them that we're doing everything that we can to prevent that student from leaving here because they were bullied.
Fair point. Yep. Okay. Well, like I said, we'll have I'll have more information for you when I pull together a presentation. We can talk some more, but I'll try to clarify some of this and sort of how it came to be. We'll go a little bit back into the history with that. So I appreciate your time on that. The only other note I have is, two more. Just so the board is aware, so we're starting to get requests, for example, to use facilities. This one's from our own group, Garden Spot Lacrosse. They want to run a fundraiser. I am going to begin allowing some of these after-school activities to occur so long as social distancing and masks are required, absolutely required. According to the new guidelines, not only do we have to post, we have to enforce. I don't know how we're going to enforce, but we're required to make sure people do what they're supposed to do regarding masks and distancing. So I am going to get back to some of these groups who are looking to use our facilities. Technically, we need to start bolting down even the midget programs, those kinds of things. They all have to be masked, too. If they're on our property, it's sort of our responsibility. So as long as folks can guarantee that, I'm going to begin doing that, just so you're aware. I even think, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, it sounds like that we're going to even do some type of theater production here in the fall. They've gotten pretty creative. It sounds like they're going to do like a radio show that you would listen to and wouldn't need to be in the auditorium. And so I'm anxious to see what the Martins come up with for that to get our kids involved in some things. So, again, we're going to be really careful, but we are going to begin sort of allowing some of these things to occur. The last thing I have, very last thing, and it wasn't on my list, I just want to make a note. Last year, the board approved the purchase of some vaping detectors, through a safety grant, and we have hit a home run on that one. We are catching kids left and right and setting them straight. This is not a good idea. In fact, the vape detectors are so good, they're able to distinguish between certain aspects of vaping. So, for example, we've had a few students putting pot in their vape devices, and the alarms that go off actually note what it is that's being picked up from the detector. So you'll see us making requests for additional detectors in bathrooms for those. Again, vaping is an epidemic, and it's not good for you. Let's call it what it is. So if we can help families find that out, I think that's incumbent upon us to do so. Just a little commercial for the vape detectors. And that concludes my rather lengthy report. I appreciate your attention.
I just have one. I know, Neil, could you just give us a brief update on the three projects we have ongoing right now, the gym, the tennis courts, and the redoing the privacy with the rooms up at the locker room? Do you just want to step to the microphone here?
Oh, I think I'm loud enough.
Okay.
In the next week or so, you're going to start seeing paint go on the tennis courts. So Mark has chosen the colors. They're going to use the Olympic colors, which are actually blue and green. So that project will be probably wrapping up here in the next couple weeks. I think the architect was supposed to give us an update on when we could get into the first section of the locker rooms. I don't want to give you an exact date. We have run into a few problems, but it's nothing that's going to impact the schedule. drastically. So we're hoping to have at least one section open by the time basketball season is coming around. And what was the other
project? The gym floor.
Oh, the gym floor. We ran into a small problem with the gym floor when they took the old wood up. They did find some areas where the floor needed to be ground down. This new floor that they're putting in is much more sensitive to being level. So that was finished up last week. We're hoping to start seeing boards being laid sometime this week.
All right. Thank you, Neil. Sorry to put you on the spot, but I think it'd be good to give an update. All right, any other questions or news?
I just have one quick question. Is there any back to the half days, which was a while ago, is there any concern waiting till next week to approve those being only a week before the half day in terms of parental schedules? Or should we move forward and get those approved today?
Actually, that's a good point, John. I didn't even look at that. That is pretty close. If the board's comfortable, we should approve that tonight. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's the board's discretion, but if you want to make a motion and do that, that would be great to announce that.
I make a motion.
We have a motion to move forward with the half-day schedule there. Is there a second?
A second.
Any discussion? Other discussion?
Yeah.
Hearing none?
Yeah, that was a second by everybody, I think.
Okay. Everybody. All right, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. That was a good pickup there. All right, we'll get that announced tomorrow, Mr. Johnson.
Any other announcements or discussion for tonight?
Yeah, I had a quick question on just moving forward when it comes to venues, football games and volleyball and other sports activities going forward. Based on the last vote that we had with the 33%, knowing the differences that were at least put out by the governor, what does that do to that vote that we took? Do we need to modify that? And if so, then I may have other questions.
That's a good question. I mean, I would consider that vote nullified when the governor's order changed. You know, when the board took that vote, the window was open to take that vote because it was sort of open, and per the solicitor's counsel. And if you recall, the board even entertained the idea of putting stipulations in that vote in case it changed back. So I would say that under the governor's order, the administration now, with clear direction from the governor, can take the lead on that, and it's not necessary. That would be my thought.
Okay. Then with that, I would ask to see when it comes to specifically the piece that we have that I have in front of me, when it came to the 20% of venue capacity. Specifically, I'll just talk right now and say the football stadium specifically of 3,000 fixed seating capacity, but that does not account for the actual total capacity of the stadium itself. And so to go with other numbers that potentially, and I'm loosely using numbers here of a 350 by 200 feet square footage, which the governor has laid out to be 67 people per 1,000 square feet, I would almost say that our stadium capacity would be near 7,000, which would allow for the 20% of a 7,000 be a lot more than the 600 people, because I don't see students being allowed to join the football team in the games. And so we'd like to discuss to see what we're doing about the actual size. And well, then to go to, maybe this would have to go to you, Neil, to say what would the actual capacity, not the seating capacity of an old gym, as far as the room itself, not necessarily the seating capacity, because the governor's guidelines do say capacity of the venue, not seating capacity.
Yeah, so as I explained previously, so what we are doing is we're using the non-seating capacity to accommodate all the athletes, the cheerleaders, and the people who are on the field. The stipulation that you're talking about, the 67 per 1,000 square feet, I believe that's a misprint. I believe there's a mistake in the document. I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But if you take 1,000 square feet, that's 10 feet by 100 feet. Mm-hmm. You couldn't fit 67 people in a 10-foot by 100-foot line. They would be shoulder to shoulder. So I don't know that that's an accurate statistic. We were told by Dr. Barnhart on a call that they were recommending, he was in direct contact with the governor's office, that it was 25 per thousand. And so we're using that. The actual grass areas of the football stadium are not huge. There's a whole not a whole lot of grass area there outside the fence, and so we're using the actual playing venue to accommodate for those grass areas so we can get the kids in there. We believe that the number that we are using is the best number that we should be at we have given the governor's order.
Okay, but I still have a problem then that, okay, if it's inaccurate, even if you take 25, that's still 25 people per 1,000 square feet with a, again, whether the fence is there or not, I would say we're still looking at, look, I'm playing the game like the governor's playing, honestly, with it, because I'm looking at no students are coming to the game, and I would feel that that's not doing the student body any good when their fellow athletes are playing. And if we have the ability to use a square footage number based on whether the fence is there or not, based on the actual square footage of the field and everything else, we would easily be able to do a 900 number, which would have allowed for the students to play, whether that is, and again, falling within the 20% that the governor is saying, we would still fall in those guidelines.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. I don't see it the same way, Brian. I just don't.
So we are saying that no students will be allowed to come watch play.
No, the students, the football players, are given 4 tickets. They may give those tickets to anyone. They can give them to family members or kids or brothers or sisters. The band will be there.
But now, what are we doing to our students, right? When we give it to them?
At the second game, what we've asked to do is we're going to call that student night and not have the band seated. So that will be an additional number of tickets that will be available for student seating.
But aren't we placing then the students to give students tickets? Who's my best friend? Who's going to – I mean, this is part of the problem that I have with even the ticket thing anyway, because you get people to do that. And I know you maybe understand that. We should be looking at the field and the actual capacity, knowing how much even if you take the field out of it, right. I think the other grass areas that are there would give a lot more than the allowable space that we're saying based on the seats.
Dr. Hollister, is there no consideration given to the in the football stadium scenario, the standing space that's available around?
Yeah. So what we've done, I've looked at the field space, the number of players, and quite honestly, we still would need to make it work for the people on the field. We would still need some of that standing area to get the numbers to work. Plus, the other issue is it's required 6 feet between people now, 6 feet. We don't have space in the stands.
It's not, though. It's not everybody 6 feet. It's unless you come in a separate vehicle or without family members. It's very specific on that.
Right.
So the 6 feet is only between groups of people and or individuals if you came by yourself.
Correct.
So I think that we're short-sighted on the 3,000 number being a 20% of 3,000. Extremely short-sighted.
Yeah, and I would agree.
And so I would make that motion still to say we maintain a 33% capacity then. If we're going to use 3,000 as the number, but I'm more than happy to say let's use a different number. Let's really, like, what does NFPA state on documents of what the seating capacity or what the capacity of the stadium is? But I don't think we have that, which means we can kind of come up with our own determination.
But I think part of the problem that you have with that is then we're then having to dictate who's standing and who's sitting.
We're going to have to dictate who is able to, how many people can get onto the stadium, and then how many people can stand. Yes.
You'd have to have standing room tickets, and you'd have to have seating tickets, and that's very complicated.
Yes. Or just a counter person that's watching how many
people. But nobody's, I get what you're saying. I just don't know how realistic it is to keep track of all that. Dr. Hauser, my also question I have for you is, I want to try to make sure that we're protecting ourselves as well regarding the football games, for instance, and the band night that I was at. I was at the football game, the first football game, and I think I mentioned to you before, just the percentage of people who were wearing masks was very small. And from my understanding is that part of our stipulation was that it had to be required. And I want to make sure that the people know that when they come in the stadium that they have to wear the masks. And I understand whatever we think about it. I want to make sure that if there are consequences, if we don't, are we going to be hurting ourselves and lose the privilege of having any games?
Right. Those rules have been more clearly defined as well. And not only are we to post, but we're asked to enforce them. And so what we'll need to do is we will need to ask people to put their masks on. And those who do not will need to be asked to leave. And if they don't leave, then we will have to escalate. And we'll get to the point where people will be banned for the season or banned for a year if they're not complying to the rules that we have in place. So we're going to have to announce that.
Right, but again, the outside is if you have to wear a mask. I just read it. Unless you're 6 feet apart, mm-mm. Or if you didn't come with a person. So again, we are not we're not allowed to enforce it anyway. The law enforcement would have to enforce it. So the governor's wrong there. But it is only if you cannot maintain 6 feet apart. Just read it.
That's not
okay.
True.
Well, you're going to have to show me then where it is, because to this point, everything I have read from the governor's order specifically have said outdoor events are unless you can maintain 6 feet with people you've come with. That's where masks are recommended. If you're indoors and it's a general public area, that's when they're required. That's what the mandate stated.
What I have as information is that we have to maintain the 6 feet and wear masks, both. And the mask must be on.
I would like to see that then before we start enforcing that.
Okay. So
that's what I was just looking at. I'll find it again.
So the question, I guess, is who's enforcing it then?
Well, and that's a challenge because I'm very concerned about putting our people in harm's way. So we're going to have to we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to make sure people have masks coming in, and they're going to have to be reminded during the game. And if they're not, they'll be asked to leave. We'll have to have someone asking people to leave. And if they don't, then we take a picture and we ban them from the events for as long as we decide it's necessary. And that could be up to a year as far as I'm concerned. And the police department will enforce a no trespass rule. And that's where I am with this.
Is it something that should be announced over the speakers?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we will absolutely announce that. I mean, we need to make that very public. And we'll continue to announce that. Any other comments?
Just might add that several places within the school, they said masks are required in all areas of the school property. And I'm not a fan of them either, but I bear with it for 12 hours at work every day in a hot, not so hot anymore. But
And it doesn't count to pull your T-shirt up over your nose, because we were seeing that too.
Well,
can it be a bandana? I mean, can it be toilet paper? I mean, I know we're talking about it when it comes to some seriousness, but everybody knows that I can't stand the things, but to get bullied in a way to wear a mask, seriously, I'm going to use that word because I do think to some extent that happens, and I'm tired of it personally. So say what everybody wants to say in the room about me not wanting to wear one, but I'm tired of hearing the rhetoric over and over that maybe I don't agree with. So that's my statement of saying I don't agree with a lot of it.
Any other comments?
Would it be a similar thing, like when you go into a restaurant and you're seated at your table, you can take off your mask? Could in the stadium, it be like a similar thing like that once you're seated in your seats in the stands? That you're
no, it's it, the, what I have is very clear. You got to keep your mask on, period.
Okay.
It's not like a restaurant. Restaurants, they've created its own caveat because you got to eat. So it's different.
And I think to a certain extent, obviously if you're at a sporting event, some people are going to yell. So who knows what for distance droplets will go into the air. So I think that's a consideration too. But
so as is the band. You know, I wouldn't want to sit downwind from the band. No offense to the band members, but you can find me there.
I have a serious question, but it might not come across that way. Is the band wearing a mask? Because how do you play an instrument with a mask on?
Yeah, they actually have covers for the instruments. Yeah, they do.
So
they have mask covers.
I mean, their mouth. How is their mouth actually covered?
They're not. The mouth isn't. But
okay, so the band's not wearing a mask.
They are when they're not playing.
Okay, but...
They have masks that go over the instruments so that the air is quote-unquote filtered.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I love consistency. I guess that's my issue with all of this.
Well, and that's one of the challenges. There isn't a consistency. It's easy to poke hole in every plan you have. That we said that from day one.
Right.
Because all these kids on school buses. And so there's a hole in our plan. And they're eating lunch together. So there's a hole in the plan. I can point out the holes too.
Right. I wasn't trying to point the holes.
No, I know, but
I'm trying to say is as far as the capacity in maintaining that distance and everything and telling people they need to wear masks, I guess I just would have liked it to be they're wearing masks except for the band. I mean, I just, in my head, I'm thinking if we're going to enforce it, we almost have to enforce it, but how do you do it? I was just playing around with that in my head, like just the struggle there of how do I explain that to anyone? And then my thought there was, as far as it all linked it back to me, I had not thought about the students getting tickets. Like that, I overlooked that aspect, and I do agree that that, to me, personally is a problem because you'd have to be a friend of somebody, specifically on the football team, a close friend, in order to get a ticket. And I'm not sure I feel about that when maybe a student really wants to go, but they don't have friends on the football team. It's almost now who you're friends with. I always looked at the tickets as going to family members. So then I guess that's my thought. If you've got band members and all of that, are they all getting tickets like the band and everybody else? Or can we make a – I mean, are they – is it just football players or who's all getting the tickets again? I just want a refresher because I overlook that.
Doing it from memory, but I think the band, each of the band parents get one,
two.
Cheerleaders, parents get them. Football players get four. And I think we have a few others that we can raffle off or do for signups.
We did have visiting team in 90.
Right. Any other questions?
Well, it's definitely been, you know, since this whole thing began, you think about what was lost in the springtime with the prom, the graduations, and everything else that the students the last 8 months, or give or take a little bit, have had to deal with. It's how can I say it? It's something that none of us would have wished for or could seen for coming. And we're just trying, all of us are just trying to do the best we can do to get through this, to make things as much, give everybody as much protection as possible and still have the events to go on. I think, in my personal opinion, we should not lose track of who, it's the kids that are playing the game, not us as parents or fans. I know from my experience, I have five children that played sports. All of them loved when we were at the games. We couldn't make all the games, those type of things, when they traveled. But I think the kids probably are more adaptable than we are as adults to what's going on. They understand if their friends and relatives possibly can't be there because of restrictions. And together we will get through this, but we have to be patient. And I respect, Brian, for you trying to find ways around the governor. I look at it this way. He had 6 months to come up with something better. You know, it wasn't as if this whole thing got dumped on him here sudden. You have different scenarios to play out. And that fully rests on his desk that, all right, here's plan A, here's plan B, here's plan C. Different modes of attack. And not every school or facility is in the same situation. Everybody has different scenarios, and mm-hmm. that rests fully on his desk up there, or whoever he was asking for advice. Yeah. You know that's. But that's what he's laid down, and
The next issue will be winter sports. Yeah. So that's already being worked on. Yeah. So that's going to be the fall season will soon be over here. The winter sports one is going to be the next challenge. That's going to be the next headache. Maybe he has a better plan by that time. I doubt it. But that's my opinion. Any other further discussion?
I just want to say very quickly, just a word of encouragement to us all, is that I have four children in the district, one in high school, two in middle school, and one in elementary. And I've heard from all of my kids, I think you're alluding to it, Tom, is that just to all the kids who are learners who are watching right now, is just how proud I am of the students here and just how adaptive they have been through all of this. And it was interesting, two of my kids were talking about this, and they're four grades apart, but they both said the same thing, is that they have noticed a difference in the culture in the schools, and that there's a developing, I think, a culture of honor that is a wonderful benefit of this really hard thing we've all been going through. And they've both have said they've seen less bullying, they've seen kids looking out for each other, defending each other more. And then my daughter, so she said the same thing. She said, yeah, now that you said that, I've noticed that. And so as hard as this has been for all of us, you know, you look for those little things that, you know, the positives that can come out of it. And so my hope is that our people, our learners are being refined and shaped and molded into being people of honor. So there's seen a lot more humility, supporting each other. So hopefully that is a culture that lasts far beyond when all this ends. So.
Good. Thank you, Gary.
Just to piggyback off of that, as a teacher, I'm also seeing something a little different. I'm seeing students so thankful to be at school, maybe as another highlight of this awful pandemic, that I think students being out have really shown them how appreciative they should be of school. It's something they took for granted, I think, a lot of them. And now I'm seeing more and more kids obeying the list, thanking the teacher for different things, or, you know, just having that better attitude, thanking their school bus drivers, you know, saying they're so glad to be able to do gym class or music class. And I was sharing that at a Garnsbot soccer game, and the parents said the same thing, that they're seeing that when they drop off their kids for elementary, the kids are waving at the teachers. They're just really excited to be here. And I think maybe that's something our society as a whole kind of needed, that turnaround, that again. So it's great to hear what you're saying too, like just all the positives that we can glean from this.
Thank you, Jackie.
You guys stole my closing comment. I think the learners here are doing an amazing job. I sent a thank you letter to all of them a couple of weeks ago. Of all the folks, everybody's working hard, but they really have had to make some hard adjustments. And because they have, we've been lucky in part, but we've also created some of our own luck in the cohorting that we're doing, the restrictions that we have in place. The ability that we have to contact trace, because we've had to do that several times, because we have things so bolted down, figuratively speaking, we're able to do that quickly and accurately. Parents have been amazingly supportive when we call and say, guess what, your little guy's got to stay home for the next 14 days. They are not happy about it, but we understand, and we appreciate what you're doing. So across the board, starting with our learners, we've had great success so far. So thank you. I'm glad you guys are seeing it too.
All right, any further comments? All right, do I have a motion to close the meeting?
Make a motion to close the meeting.
Thank you. Is there a second? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? See you all next week.